welcome to a very special episode of our In the Paddock interview series. This week we have with us two guests, rally co-driver, SCCA Rallycross competitor, and Dirtfish Rally School instructor Michelle Miller. We also have with us former co-host of OpenPaddock.net, who's also a Rallycross competitor himself, Doug Patterson. We'll talk a bit about Michelle's background in rally and rallycross, and since both Michelle and Doug were at the 2017 Dirtfish SCCA Rallycross Nationals at Heartland Park Topeka in Topeka, Kansas, we'll have a heavy focus on that event. This is In the Paddock from OpenPaddock.net. Good evening, good morning, or good day, wherever you're listening to us and whenever you're listening to us. I'm your host, Mike Shaw. Our regular co-presenter, Ian Holmes, is still in the woods of Wales watching the world's best attack some legendary stage roads. Well, actually, at this hour, he's probably sleeping to get ready for tomorrow's stages. However, in his place, I have a very special guest host with us, Doug Patterson. Welcome back to the show, Doug.
Hey, I'm glad to be back.
Well, longtime listeners will remember Doug from the earlier years of Open Paddock. You're actually the key why I'm doing what I'm doing now.
The halcyon days.
Yes, indeed. But since Open Paddock transitioned from being traditional motorsports, including Formula One and IndyCar and all that stuff, we transitioned to a rally focus. Doug, you've moved on to IndyCar coverage over at FBC Indy, the podcast over there on FormulaOneBlog.com. So for those of you that follow IndyCar as I do, you should really check out that podcast. It's really cool. So Doug, just in how are you doing this evening, man?
I'm doing okay. I'm here at the world headquarters of Fundamental Technologies. There's only one shot.
Yeah, so world headquarters. It's the one place, right?
Yeah, here in Lawrence, Kansas. So yeah, I'm at work. Schedule is busy, so Thursdays I just stay here and I've got a nice comfy couch in my office, and I'll be the first one at work in the morning.
We actually have with us on the line right now our guest Michelle Miller from Dirtfish Rally School. Michelle, how are you doing this evening?
I'm great, Mike. Great to be on the show.
Well, thank you so much for being here. Before we get into talking about the Rallycross Nationals, we should probably get a little bit of a background here, as we do with any new guest on the show. How did you get started in motorsports, or more specifically, rally racing?
I started probably like a lot of people, just super into cars and would go to car shows and that kind of thing. And I had a friend invite me out to a novice autocross school. And that's really what kind of got me hooked. I went to that. I was like, wow. This is so much fun. I want to do more of this. And before I knew it, I was running the local club's novice program, then became a board member and just got really, really involved. Eventually made my way to the SCCA Solo Nationals. I've taken three championships there. And that's kind of how I connected with Dirtfish a little bit. One of the instructors there was also a guy I competed against, and he asked me to come out and see if I wanted to work at Dirtfish as an instructor, mostly because of a lot of the volunteer work I'd done on the club level. So I did that, and I guess they liked me, because 4 years later, here I am at Dirtfish, teaching people how to drive rally cars and having a good time doing it.
Well, and you're not just an instructor there. There's a lot of different things that you've been doing, right? So you're still competing with the SCCA Rallycross. So still involved with SCCA. You were saying that, you know, obviously being an instructor, you're sitting in the co-driver's seat for Sam Albert, one of the Dirtfish team members there. And you manage the Dirtfish Motorsports team as well?
That's correct. 2 years ago, I took on the role as we decided to build our motorsports team, mostly around the Red Bull Global Rallycross. So I've been running that team for the last 2 years. I have an amazing group of technicians that work with us, and we've been working with two really, really good young drivers, kind of using the Dirtfish method of just developing driver skills and making those two in particular really, really competitive in that field.
Well, and that's Connor Martell and James Rimmer, right?
That's correct. Yeah.
And they actually had a pretty strong finish this year, didn't they?
They did. You know, with racing, there's a lot of bad and good luck. So we had some of our bad luck, of course. But at our last race in LA, Connor came out with the win, which was really great for him to finish the season with that. He just ran away from everyone in every single heat. And James in Seattle really put on a show for the fans up until the final. But he won all of his heats in his semifinal in Seattle in the hometown race. So that was really, it's really been fun to watch both of them grow, both as drivers and, you know, going from 19 to 20 years old, seeing them kind of grow as young men too.
So, you know, considering that you're also a competitor and you're sitting in the right seat next to Sam, have you ever actually competed as a driver for a stage rally?
I have. My first rally was Idaho Rally, and I rented a Geo Metro, of all things.
A Metro?
Yeah. That's often greeted with silence. I can imagine the look of shock on your face.
But a little bit.
It was a really cheap rental, and I have to say, it was just an absolute blast. I took my husband as my co-driver with the plan of, well, if he co-drives in a rally, he's going to want to build a rally car because he's not going to want to buy this Geo Metro. And it worked.
Was this a silver Metro?
It was red.
Okay.
Yeah, and a lot of people have rented this car, so it was
okay.
Kind of
favorite. So I'm wondering if I've seen this car at 100 Acre Wood, and in my memory, I remember a silver one.
This one was red, and it's been around the Northwest for a while. I think it's been around the car for like 20 years or something. So, yeah. And it was a hoot. I finished, and I wasn't last, which was my goal. And it was a lot of fun, and you know, from the co-driver perspective, having a chance to drive a stage and see what a driver needs to hear was really, really cool and really helped me as a co-driver to, you know, be a little more timely with the notes and just have that understanding of both sides of the car.
Well, you pretty much answered a question I already had, which was, you know, does being a rallycross driver or in this case running a stage, you know, and being a Dirtfish instructor really aid you in co-driving or vice versa? And it sounds like that's definitely the case.
For sure. You know, especially the instructing piece, because you're just really comfortable in a car. You're used to being calm. You're used to suggesting what people should do to improve. So in the co-driver seat, I can, you know, obviously call notes, but Sam and I can have really good debriefs on our transits and talk about ways that both of us can improve, which is really, really helpful.
Well, those of us that are involved in rally know that there's more women are involved in rally than any other form of motorsport, which is awesome, but it's still just a fraction of the, you know, of the numbers of competitors we'd like to see, you know, that are of women racing. I'm kind of curious, you know, you being at the school there and whatnot, you know, teaching people, do people find it surprising that you're a woman that's over there instructing, but also do you find that it maybe draws in women to learn the sport and want to become competitive drivers?
I don't know if surprising would be the right word. You know, you get all sorts of different reactions from people. Most people really don't care, or at least that's the front they put on. And once you get in the car and you give a demo and you show that you're competent at what you do, all that gender stuff goes away. So that's been great teaching. And what I find is really helpful is that, you know, we have mostly men that do come to the school, and they work with me or they see me working with other people and they're like, oh, I should bring my wife next time. It's something that, like, you don't even really think about, right? You go with your buddies or whatever, and they're thinking, man, I should bring my wife, I should bring my daughters. So for the students that are already there, it kind of opens their thinking up a little bit. And then obviously, you know, for women that are looking to get into it, maybe are a little tentative or nervous, or like me, when I went to my first school, I didn't want to be the slowest one. I didn't want to hold anyone back, all those things that go on in our mind because we're crazy. It helps them get over that, like, oh, someone's going to understand, right? Even if I don't work with them, just the fact that they see, like, hey, Dirtfish wants women there, opens the door to people a little bit more.
Well, and you're not the only, you know, female instructor there. You've got Kathy Hardy's out there, right? And is there anybody else?
That's it for the instructor pool now, okay. But, you know, our general manager, Molly Schaefer,
right.
Obviously a female as well. So we're really big on trying to get more women engaged in motorsport. And even if they don't go into racing, just building car control skills for everybody, you know, regardless of age, gender, whatever. That's what we do, and that's what we love to do.
Well, I definitely have it on my list to have my wife come up and give it a try. She's gone up and seen, been up there for a rallycross that was there on the grounds once. You met her. And, you know, she seems keen on the idea of getting behind the wheel. So, and I think that was, like you're saying, that was part of it. The fact that she's seeing other women do this kind of thing. She's like, I guess I can do it. Yeah. I mean, so.
And, you know, it's a great place to to start. We have a really good curriculum that just builds people up and builds them up. So we don't ask people to do anything too crazy right away. We just want people to get good behind the wheel.
So speaking of instructing just in general, though, you know, we were talking to Sam and he gave us kind of some fun moments that he had while instructing. Do you have any exciting, interesting, or challenging moments as an instructor?
You know, it's funny. I listened to Sam's podcast and I did the same exact thing when I interviewed.
That's awesome.
I don't know if I've ever told him, but with Adam Newell in the car, yeah. So we share a corner or a straightaway, if you want to call it that. I was cracking up pretty hard about that. You know, instructing is really fun because you get to meet so many amazing people, and it's always challenging because you have to figure out how people learn pretty quickly, and that's what I love about it. But sometimes you're a little bit off. So I think maybe one of my most memorable moments is, you know, we were on this little corner and the car was getting a little bit more out of control than the driver wanted. And they actually closed their eyes and let go of the steering wheel.
Whoa.
So people let go of the steering wheel all the time, but the closing the eyes part is just a little bit much. So,
yeah, that was the part that concerned me. You know, usually letting go, the car will generally right itself if it's not too badly out of shape, but the closing of the eyes, that's a little dodgy.
Yeah, we don't generally advise people to let go of the wheel. So, you know, I'm like, all right, let's open our eyes and put our hands back on the wheel. Everything's fine. And it was a fun moment.
You know, and the funny thing, you know, I'm remembering my first time I took a class there was there. You guys are always focusing on where we're looking all the time, because that's one of the biggest things to learn, right? Is knowing where to look, because that's where the car is going to follow. It's kind of like where your head goes, the body follows.
Exactly.
Yeah, so, and I still use those skills to this day, so I learned a lot from that. I still have to catch myself, though, and make sure that I'm doing it, but the fact that the awareness is there has rubbed off, so that's a good thing.
Mike, we all do, and no matter what level people are at, it always comes back down to like, oh yeah, my vision was a little short, that's why that corner didn't quite go how I wanted it to go, so... Yeah.
It's solo. We're always telling people, and I tell this to people in rallycross, look ahead. Always look ahead.
Yeah. Don't look at the corner you're in. Look at the one you're going to.
Right. You've either made that or you've missed it. There's nothing you can do about it. You got to focus on what's ahead, not where you're at, because that's really behind you.
So at Dirtfish, there's actually several different cars now to choose from. You guys are getting in, I think, some newer cars in, some of the newer model Subarus. You've got some of the older ones that I got to drive around. And then you've got the rear-wheel drive BRZs there. Do you have a favorite?
Well, I probably shouldn't say what my favorite is, but I actually got to teach in my favorite car today, which is car number 23. And it's one of our older hatchbacks. But it's just a great car, and I've always loved coaching in the car and driving the car. But I have to say, the rear wheel drive stuff is really, really fun. So, you know, it's a toss up between, do I want all that power of the STI, or do I just want to go sideways and not have to work for it? So it kind of depends on the mood I'm in for the day. If I want to go really sideways, I love driving those BRZs.
Sounds like a hell of a lot of fun. I've been kind of pondering for a half day class that I've got to come up and do and get myself my skills honed again, and I'm having a tough time making a decision now. Now, you were talking about being involved with GRC, and you guys have those lights cars there. Have you gotten a chance to drive one of those?
I have. I've taught a couple people in them, and I've driven those. You know, they're a whole different ballpark than driving a rally car, because they're mostly set up to drive on tarmac with just a little bit of dirt stuff. So they have these crazy good rallycross tires that have great grip on the tarmac but are pretty slippy on the dirt. And the car, the only word I can use to describe it is just raw. It's loud, you know, you're banging through the gears, you're right at the top of the rev limiter, everything's vibrating in the car. So it's just like this really direct connection with the vehicle, and they're incredible cars to drive.
You know, I've not driven one, but I've got to go for a ride in one down in LA when Red Bull just signed on with the GRC, and they had a media day, and I went down for that. And all I remember is it didn't matter how tight the belts were. I was in one of the lights cars. How tight I had those belts, I was still moving in my damn seat.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I couldn't breathe, and yet I was still moving. Those things grip so damn good.
Yeah, the grip is phenomenal. The lateral Gs you get out of those things are pretty nuts. Yeah, our drivers have a very good, physical workout program that they adhere to so that they can move those things around. Yep. But, you know, Mike, we do have one of – we have three cars. Two of them we use for the race team, and then one actually stays at the school. So we use that as a training car, and that's available to some of more of our advanced students as well.
So basically, if you graduate through some of the other courses, you can actually get to the point where you can choose to have a class with that car, huh?
That's right. Yep.
Oh, man. I gotta start saving up.
I know.
Actually, speaking of physical fitness stuff, I guess that's a good kind of general question. So do you have a physical fitness regimen you keep up so you can always keep your skills honed?
Yeah, you know, I'm not really a gym person, but I do love to, like, go for a jog and be outside. So I do a lot of stuff like that. We live in such a lovely area here, so there's lots of hiking and stuff like that that we can do. So I would say that's mostly it, is I just jog when I can and take the dog out. And, you know, on race weekends, it's really, really tough, especially the Global Rallycross weekends, because we're working 16, 18-hour days. So I don't always fit it in like I'd like to there. But, you know, I keep my step counter on, and I figure if I'm doing 25,000 steps a day, I'm all right. I can skip a couple days of jogging and stuff like that. And then I just try to eat healthy and take good care of myself. It's, you know, it's really about the core being strong, especially in that co-driver seat, because you don't have the wheel to hang on to, and you don't always know what's going to be going on in the car. So as long as I keep my core strong, I'm feeling pretty good in there.
Michelle, how do you have you noticed that your physical fitness has an impact on your mental fitness as well? Does being physically fit help you mentally retain focus in the car?
I think it definitely helps. I think for me, it's more about my diet more than anything. Like if I'm not eating well, my mental energy gets pretty strained, so to say. Mm-hmm. So, and that's really hard to do when you travel too. So I, you know, for rally weekends, I pack a whole bunch of snacks and make sure we have, you know, some healthy food to eat. So we're not just having Cheez-Its. I love Cheez-Its. Drinking lots of water, and obviously sleep is super important, but you're not always getting a lot of that either. So if everything else, you know, you can keep around you and in a good state, you can get away with that little bit less sleep. Apples. That's my key to staying mentally fit.
An apple a day.
An apple a stage or something. Yeah.
Well, you're living in the right area to have plentiful amount of those, right?
Right. It's like natural Red Bull.
Before actually we go on to the SCCA Nationals, I did have a couple of the just kind of quick questions. Now, you've mostly been based on the West Coast here, but you've done some rally events. You know, I saw you, of course, over at Ojibwe Forest Rally and whatnot. Do you have a favorite rally in North America you've been to?
I think my favorite rally is the one that's been the most difficult because, you know, I like to struggle. And that would be Pacific Forest Rally up in Merritt, British Columbia. The roads are just beautiful. It's been hard every year, but like you're just on that edge of having such great success. And it's where I think Sam and I have found like that energy in the car with each other that's been really, really good. So you just have this kind of continuous loop where I'm feeding him the note, he's doing it, the car's doing everything it's supposed to do, and you're like almost in this zen moment of, you know, you and the car. And we found that really beautiful kind of driving up there. We've also found, as you know from interviewing him a couple weeks ago, some of our biggest struggles. So, you know, the good with the bad, but the roads up there are phenomenal. The town's great. It's in fall, so it's just beautiful with the leaves changing and dust flying and all that jazz. So,
got some great pictures, of course, of Sam up there. But Rhiannon was substituting
yes.
Because you were down in LA for GRC, so you had to miss out on your favorite rally, unfortunately. But
yeah, I was pretty bummed. But Rhiannon's amazing, so I was really happy that he had her in the car with him because I know that she'd push him to do his very best, and she's got so much experience that we can both learn a lot from her. So.
Now, great. He told us a little bit from a driver's perspective what it was like taking the Oz Rally Pro class. And you guys went and did that together, right? So
yeah.
What was that like as a co-driver?
You know, they have a really amazing program. We were both pretty surprised with actually how much they gave us. Like, I felt like I got all their trade secrets, which was pretty amazing. It really helped me with just kind of how to write the notes so that I could read them a little bit better back to Sam. It helped us both kind of understand what we both need to be successful in the car. So as far as like when we're on recce, changing a couple things, changing how we call things so that it helps me stay on and helps him know that I'm on the notes so that he's trusting the notes a little bit better. And obviously helping us find spots where we can find more speed. And those guys are so incredibly organized. They like, they put me to shame. So I'm still working on, you know, doing all the organizational work and trying to compete at their level. But the amount of work that you can put into an event can really, really bring you great success. Just that peace of mind of everything being planned and not having last minute, you know, random things come up with like, oh, well, where does this stage start? And, you know, my phone doesn't have GPS now. I don't know where to go. So it's incredibly helpful.
Yeah, that's kind of one of the things that is why I brought up that I noticed you were planning so far in advance is she and Alex had stressed how important that planning well in advance is, right? It's really all about the planning. And if you get that out of the way, it makes the event so much easier.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting. Obviously, I do it when I co-drive, but it's also something I've brought into running the motorsports team. It's just being a little bit more ahead on all of that stuff, not just planning for the event, but like having all my post-event stuff like all ready to go. So I can just fill in the blanks as the weekend's going through and have to, you know, try to remember everything that happened. And so it's not just helpful as far as driving and co-driving, but it's kind of helpful in life, right?
Certainly. Maybe I should take one of those classes just so I can get my life organized. I don't know. Well, let's talk about the STCA Nationals, of which Dirtfish Rally School is the title sponsor, right?
That is correct, yep.
Well, and I should say it's not just for the national championship. Dirtfish was the title sponsor for the entire program for this 2017 season, right?
That's right, Doug.
Dirtfish has been so good at supporting so many different avenues of rally throughout the year. And over the years, really, you guys have always been really good about that. For those that don't, I guess, maybe know that are listening to this, what SCCA Rallycross is kind of all about. Doug or Michelle, you guys want to give just a quick description of what makes it maybe a little bit different from, you know, obviously stage rally, you're out there on public roads.
Right. So if you think about, say, European Rallycross or Global Rallycross, you know, you think of cars on tarmac and dirt, you know, an old racetrack where sometimes you're on the tarmac, sometimes you're cutting through the dirt, but wheel to wheel, right? That's not what this is. This is, although a lot of rallycrossers will bristle at this, but it's really what it is. It's autocross on dirt. It's really what SCCA Solo, back when it was called Gymkhana, really started out being. That is, you have a field or a patch of dirt, or this coming Saturday, November 4th, the Kansas City region is going to be at a sand drag strip, and we'll use the runoff for, you know, the clay surface runoff and the grass parking lot for our course. But we'll set up a course delineated by cones, and it'll be one driver through the course at a time. Course times are generally between 45 and 70 seconds, depending upon the size of the venue and the conditions of the course. And unlike autocross, though, where in autocross it is your best time that is scored out of your total number of runs. You usually get three or four or five runs, something like that. It's just your best time that is scored. If you have a disastrous time, well, you've got another run, no worries. In rallycross, it's like stage rally, where the time is cumulative, and so every run counts, and that makes consistency far greater of part of the equation for success at rallycross than say in solo. But scoring is sort of the same. You're penalized 2 seconds for every cone that you strike, except in solo, where if you miss a gate, it's just DNF, you don't get a time. Since our times are cumulative, if you miss a gate, you keep going, you finish the course, but you're going to take a 10-second penalty for missing an element. It's it's the same but different than autocross. I like the cumulative time because it rewards focus and consistency and stick-to-itiveness. And as we go through some of the results from this year's national championship, one of the key things is going to be that consistency and that stick-to-itiveness and you know, never give up. You know, that we see very often in rally, and we see that kind of echoed in rallycross as well.
So, Michelle, you've been doing rallycross for a little while now. What is it you like so much about that sport?
Actually, I'm going to correct you on that, Mike. I started an autocross, the tarmac version that Doug was talking about.
Right.
I've only actually done 3 rallycrosses in my life.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I did autocross for, I don't know, 13 years or something. And I did one at Dirtfish with Tito's car, his little Starlet, I think it is. And that was a blast. And then I did one in our Ford Focus that we've now converted into a stage rally car. And then the Nationals last weekend was, my first Nationals. And I just borrowed a car and went out and raced that one.
That was Steve Hyatt's Mazda 2, right?
Correct. Yep.
And I saw you up at Dirtfish in the little yellow one. Is that the Focus that you're in?
That is. Yep. It is now no longer yellow. Thank goodness. And, my husband's been doing some stage in that. And when I'm not sitting in a co-driver's seat, my plan is to drive that.
Oh, that's awesome. Because I do remember seeing you tooling around that little rallycross course that they set up there with the Northwest Rally Association. We've had Keto Brielmeyer, who is the guy that heads up the Northwest Rally Association up there for those events. And you were going around this long sweeper, and you were full tripod, three-wheeling it around that. Just, it was great to see. It was a great run.
Yeah, that was really fun. I don't know if it was fast, but it looked good, so I'll
sure
take it.
Did. So, I'm going to ask you, Michelle, you know, you were there and you were competing in your third rallycross event. Now, the course there, what was it like compared to other courses you've competed in?
Sure. So I've honestly really only competed on gravel. The only time I'm on the grass is when I'm making mistakes. So it was really interesting to be in basically a mowed down hayfield that quickly turned into hard packed dirt on Saturday morning. And then once the rain hit, some super, super sloppy mud, which was actually pretty amusing to watch. So the surface was a lot different, but, you know, you adapt and you do what you can with it. It was surprisingly grippy, so I was kind of surprised by the amount of grip that we had out there. And Steven let me borrow this Mazda 2, so it was a fun little light car, and it was pretty easy to toss that thing around a little bit. And, you know, I finished mid-pack and had a good time. What I like best about rallycross and solo autocross for that is that it's a really easy to enter motorsport. And if you talk to people who are racing now, it's where actually a lot of them started, because you can take your street car. You don't have to do anything special. You go out, you drive around, you have a good time. Yeah, you're not getting tons of seat time, but you get to hone some car control skills, get to meet great people in the community. And for a lot of us, not just me, it opens up a lot of opportunity to do other kind of racing and gives you the confidence you need if you want to go do a track day. You're like, okay, I already know what my car is going to do when it slides out. Or if you want to go do a rally sprint or a stage rally, you have an idea of how your car handles in the dirt. And that's why I love it. And that's why, honestly, Dirtfish wants to be a part of it, is because we want to grow the sport of rally in North America. And things like rallycross is what gets people eventually to stage rally. So
yeah, that was actually going to be one of my questions a little later, is right. Is the fact that, is it a, you know, is this a good kind of a ladder program, right? You start off with maybe people doing the rally crosses, then there's SCCA has brought back rally sprints. We're not seeing very many of those yet, but they're starting to happen. I know American Rally,
they're building.
Yeah. Right. Yep. Northwest Rally Association's done a couple. There's been a couple in other places that we've seen.
Tito's really been leading the charge on that.
Yeah. That's great. You know, we want to see that. And it allows, you know, people to go to that. That's basically a single road run multiple times, but they're still trying to keep the average speed. You know, it's faster than rallycross, right? But it's not like stage rally speeds, right?
Right.
Correct.
So,
yep.
And then the next level up would be stage rally. So I'd like to definitely see all of that grow. And it looks like the interest has been growing. And actually, Doug, why don't you jump in here? Because talk about, with Rallycross, the different number of classes there are and the number of competitors that you guys saw out there in Heartland Park, Topeka.
So, yeah, they're another one of the big differences between between solo and rallycross. And here, I don't, you know, please don't misunderstand. I love both sports. They're both awesome. But one of the big differences is in solo, you have, let me think, you have about 3.8 times 10 to the 6th different classes. So it seems like every there's this little niche class for every type of prep. It's just it's crazy the class bloat, and it's always a discussion every year. And they're adding another class next year, STH. I don't know where it stops, man. But in Rallycross we have 9, and so how they're defined is there are 3 different prep levels. So there's stock, and in Rallycross, when we say stock, we mean stock. I mean, you're running on stock springs, stock dampers, no changes to the engine. You can put in a drop-in air filter, but that's about it. You can't even change the wheel size. It's got to be the stock wheels. So stock is stock. And then prepared.
Quick question. With the stock, can you use whatever tire type that you want? In other words, can you put on like an off-road or tire for the mud? Or
so in stock, you can use any street tire, any non-competition tire.
Okay.
If you could squeeze a light truck tire underneath, you know, in your wheel well, that works. So long as it is a tire not marked for competition only. So no rally tires in the stock class. In prepared, you can run any tire you want. You can also run any wheel you want. Your suspension is a lot more open. And so you can put on coilovers. You can change the sway bars. You know, change exhaust. You can't modify the engine. So from the throttle body forward, you can change. So you can add a cold air intake, but you can't change the turbo. You can't do any of that kind of jazz. You can't put the fancy forged internals in. So you can't get just crazy stupid with the motor. But you can do a lot of fun things. I really dig the prepared class. I think that's my favorite class. And then there's modified, which is, so long as it still looks like the car it's supposed to be, go for it. Almost. And so, you know, the modified rules are way more open. So those are your 3 basic prep levels. And then those 3 prep levels are subdivided by drivetrain. Right. So they're stock, front wheel, rear wheel, and all-wheel drive, prepared front, rear, and all-wheel drive, then modified front, rear, and all-wheel drive, giving you the 9 classes.
That's fair. So, Michelle, what class was the car you were racing in?
It was in prepared front.
But now I will say that was primarily because of the tires. I don't think Steven had done a whole lot else to that car, had he?
It had a cold air intake on it, and I think he said he changed one of the sway bars out, and then we were running on gravel tires, so it's mostly tires that put it into the prepared class.
He's quick with that thing, and it's surprising how nimble that little car can be.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's great driving a small car through some of that stuff, and had a really nice liftoff oversteer, which is one of my favorite things to do, so I was pretty happy in it.
Now, Michelle, tell us about your runs that you had. I mean, you described the conditions a little bit of being out there. What were your runs like?
Sure. You know, it was actually kind of surprising to me because they were all in first gear, and I'm not really used to driving in first gear. So that was interesting. The car is pretty punchy in first, except for that one run where it was super duper muddy. I ran that in second just so that I'd get a little bit of traction. But, you know, it was really fun. I wasn't the fastest person out there, but, you know, I had a good time with it. I hit one cone. Yeah. So that cost me 2 seconds, but the rest of it was pretty darn good. You know, the course setups were really nice. They had really nice flow to them, and I was able to play around with the car a little bit and get it to move around quite a bit.
Leon Drake was the chief of course designers again this year, and I worked with him last year as one of the course designers for last year's championship. And he is really great. I really like how he works with all of his course designers so that the three different courses for the national championships kind of work and flow together. There's differences between them that exercise different technical aspects of driving. I know Jan Gerber's course, the first course on Saturday, was a lot tighter and more technical than the second course Saturday afternoon, which was much more open and flowing. Am I remembering that right, Michelle?
Yes, you are.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then the last course of the weekend is usually one that cuts across the other two, and this is where Leon's job as the course design chief and coordinating all this, you have to cross where the old courses were kind of perpendicular, so you don't run the risk of tumbling somebody over up on their lid by getting stuck in a rut.
Now, Doug, you said that, you know, there's three different courses that were designed for the Nationals. And I guess that's one thing that separates this the Nationals from your typical rallycross courses, right? Your typical rallycross course, you're going to spend an afternoon, you know, in some place fairly local. The Nationals is held at one place, right? That changes from year to year. It's a multi-day event.
Right. So Friday is when drivers will arrive and they'll have the class inspection. So you'll have a park expose, basically. Your car is on display and available for scrutineering from your fellow competitors. And if anyone sees something a little dodgy, they are free to file a complaint and protest then. Usually what happens is we just sit around and jaw about each other's cars. And you know, it's kind of like a giant cars and coffee on dirt. But occasionally there's some controversy, but not usually. And then you get to walk the course, and there's a practice course set up by the hosting region where you can kind of do a shakedown stage, if you will, and that helps raise money for the host region, so that you know that you pay so much per run, and then the money raised goes to help offset all the other costs that the host region is incurring. On Saturday, you have your first course in the AM. The way that it's supposed to work on paper is that you have all nine classes run four or five runs in the morning on the first course. You break for lunch, and then you reconvene and you do four or five more on the afternoon course. And then you go and you have lots of food and lots of beers and talk crap about how well you're driving when maybe you're really not, but try, you know, the typical things we do after competition, right? And then you come back the next morning and you have about four or five more runs on the Sunday course. And after a bit of time, I think it's 30 minutes they have to allow after the posting of results for any protests to be filed. Then they have the award ceremony. It's usually right there on site, and they give out the trophies and the True Grit Award. And so that's your general thing. Whereas a typical regional rallycross, you will typically have two courses. You'll have a morning course and an afternoon course. Sometimes it's the morning course run backwards, depending on how well the surface is holding up. But you usually do have a variance of courses even at a regional, which is another big difference from solo, where it's just one course for everybody.
So obviously being a national event and trying to keep within that time schedule, but there's a lot of competitors that show up, right? I mean, how many did you guys have this time?
We had 123. It was sold out, and so we had a good turnout. You know, Rallycross is growing. It's the fastest growing segment in the SCCA, and so we're looking at trying to grow the participation in nationals. And but that also means we can't have it in the same place every year, because you have 123 drivers, especially in the prepared and modified class, with some pretty aggressive tires that will chew up some turf. And so last year was at Indianola at the National Balloon Classic Field in Indianola, Iowa. This year it was at Heartland Park, Topeka, in Topeka, Kansas. Next year we're going back to Indianola, and the year after that, maybe back to Heartland Park, maybe somewhere else. But I think they want to do a rotation of about three to give some time for these sites to heal and recover from the punishment. You know, some thought have been given to, well, what if we had nationals out in the West Coast and then Central and then East Coast? It's a long pull for someone like Keto or you, Michelle, to come from the Pacific Northwest to the Midwest, to Topeka, Kansas, just like it's a long pull for someone from Alabama or Georgia. But it's a darn near impossible pull from someone in Georgia to make the pull up to Dirtfish, or vice versa, someone from Arizona making the pull up to Maine, the Northeast region. They try to keep it centrally located to minimize the inconvenience. It's not going to be inconvenient for somebody, but you minimize that.
It's maximize, a happy medium, sure.
Yeah, it is. You maximize how many people can come out. And I know they're wanting to target 200 competitors in future events. It's just whether the sites can endure it and whether the growth will support it.
Right. Now, Michelle, you were out there not only as a competitor, but also helping promote Dirtfish and whatnot. What kind of feedback have you noticed with Dirtfish's involvement with the championship in Rallycross throughout the year? A lot of interest when you guys were kind of set up there, kind of showing off your wares and people wanting to come up and take classes, maybe better themselves?
For sure. You know, everyone was really, really happy to have us supporting the program. I think some of our support went to developing a new app, which was a really, really handy tool for competitors, and then also for all of our friends that are, like, watching from afar and want to follow results. So, it was great to meet all the competitors. You know, I would say everyone who has the means wants to come to Dirtfish and learn to get better, and so, hopefully that will happen for a lot of them. We were actually able to donate one of our three-day classes, and we gave that to one of the guys who finished kind of mid-pack. So someone who, has been doing it for a little while but needs that little bit of extra help to get up there. So hopefully he'll be coming over to the school pretty soon. But
a three-day class?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Huge.
Yeah, he was shell-shocked. Yeah, I don't think he could even talk.
That's awesome.
So that was pretty nice. And, everyone out there, they love what they're doing. And, I guess you'd call us kind of dirt nerds or something like that. But really, really pleased to have Dirtfish be a part of it. And, it brings legitimacy to the Rallycross program. And then it also brings legitimacy to the school to be associated with SCCA, because they have, they do so much racing in the United States in all different disciplines, and very well-respected organization. So it's great being partnered with them.
I bet it was fun giving that certificate or whatever to him and seeing that reaction.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And we'll probably do a little story on him through the Dirtfish page when he comes out to the school. And I know that I don't know if it's gone out yet, but we're working on a little press release about the nationals as well.
That's right. And for those of you listening, if you haven't been to Dirtfish's website and seen the articles and stuff they post, you guys have been writing up some damn good stuff. Everything from the history of some of the cool cars you guys have in your museum to the events you guys are competing in, and just all kinds of stuff that's rally related, and including the stuff with the Rallycross. It's just you guys are doing some great work on that, and so for those of you guys that are listening, if you haven't read that, go to Dirtfish's website. They got some great stuff you guys have been putting up on there, and it's really cool. I know I read it for sure.
Well, I won't take credit for all of it, but we have a really good team of people that are really working to build the brand and just make, like you do, Mike and Doug, just make this sport more accessible to people and a little less intimidating. And yeah, last weekend was busy because we had the Rallycross, and then we had one of our cars at LSPR. Hannu Mikkola drove the Mark II Escort. And then
what a fantastic car.
Yeah, I mean, one of your museum pieces was out on the stages.
That's correct. And then another one was down at Rally Legends. Alistair McRae drove the Subaru Legacy down there, so in Italy. So it was a very busy weekend for us. We're still trying to put everything together and get out all the great information that came out.
That's awesome stuff. Like I said, your guys' support and all the different, I guess, you guys having your little tendrils in a little bit of everything, which is just, it's awesome. Yeah. I couldn't be more happy with all the stuff you guys are doing. It's great. Now, there was a little bit of drama that happened at the SCCA Nationals, and it had to do, Doug, you had messaged me a little bit about someone wanting to reset and redo the times for the modified fronts, was it?
Yeah, so here's what happened. We knew that weather was coming. We could watch the line coming in. We were watching it develop all afternoon, and then we could see the dark horizon there to the west as a line of severe thunderstorms was approaching the track, the Heartland Park Topeka. And so they were trying to get as many cars through, but eventually, halfway through the first modified front wheel drive runs, they had to terminate competition due to lightning. And so once the lightning got too close to the site, that's it. We had to shut down. The rule is you shut down for at least 30 minutes, but everybody knew that, you know, once it's here, it's going to be here to stay. It's not going anywhere all night long. So they just canceled the rest of competition for Saturday, and we all went to the Blind Tiger and had awesome beer and barbecue. But they resumed competition, so it was a break in competition. Right, competition was put on hold, and then it was resumed the next morning, picked up where they left off. There were five mod front drivers that had gone through. Two of them had good times. There were some issues with the timing and scoring equipment. But two of the drivers had officially timed and scored runs.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, those were in the 48s. The next morning, after about an inch or so of rain, the mud was deep and it was slick. And so those who went off for their first runs on Sunday morning, they were not in the 48s, right? And they knew that they weren't going to be. And
sure.
So the event chair made the decision to say, hey, let's put everybody on an equal footing and restart the mod front heat.
So I'm going to take up issue with that right now, because this is Rallycross, and Michelle, you've competed in, you know, a lot of stage, not a lot of rallycross, but in stage rally, and, you know, sometimes the position you're in, sometimes you win, sometimes you lose, right? Based on the conditions. It's always variable.
Yep. There's always that argument, do you want to be first on the road because you have no dust, but then you got all that loose gravel, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, and, you know, do you rerun a stage just because it starts to snow halfway through it? No, right? Of course you don't.
Nope, you drive slower.
Right, and you know, so the first person through got to go through on a dry stage. Great. Next person are dealing with snowflakes the size of dinner plates, and well, tough. You know, welcome to rally. You know, and it is rallycross. It is a weather dependent sport. It's an all weather sport, and you know, you roll the bone, you take chances, and you know, weather is just part of it. Now, they did ask if safety and the course designers had made any modifications. And no, it was exactly the same course as was left on Sunday night or Saturday night. So there are no course changes. It was just as if they paused to wait for lightning and then resumed. Whether that pause was 5 minutes, 5 hours, 5 days, it doesn't matter. It was just a pause in competition. And so immediately a protest was brought, and Jim Rowland, our rallycross steward in the Midwest division, was the chair of the protest committee that heard the arguments. I spoke with him afterwards, and he and the group came to the conclusion that yeah, it's the same course. It was officially timed and scored, so it's a valid run. You can't get rid of a valid run, so the run stayed. It ended up not affecting the competition, but you know, it's one of those things where it just highlights, you know, no, don't do this.
Right.
Weather is part of it.
Right.
I'm glad that it didn't ultimately affect the competition, but it could have done, right? And so
right.
Hopefully it's we move forward from this, we learn from it, say, okay, that's the way of it, and you know, in hindsight,
prepared for anything, you know.
Right. In hindsight, you know, hindsight's 20/20, and so I don't want to double guess you know, the event organizers or anything like that. But it might have been best to say, hey, look, we know we've got weather coming. It's going to be tight getting this next class in. Let's just break it right here and go to the pub. And, you know, not mess with trying to beat the storm.
Yeah, try and beat the storm.
But, you know, like I said, that's hindsight and, you know, armchair quarterbacking. So
sure, sure. Now, Michelle, have you had situations, you know, specifically where you've gone through and it's severely either improved or, you know, been better for you than someone you were competing against or vice versa, where the condition just happened to be a lot worse for you?
Usually it's because the car is broken in stage, but you know, that's, you know, this happens in solo a lot, especially out here in the Pacific Northwest. Rain's always a threat, not lightning so much. So, you know, you're always hedging your bets. Like, well, do I want to get, what grid line do I want to get in? You know, it's cold right now, but it's dry. Is it going to rain? But if it doesn't rain, then the track will be warmer and you'll have better traction, and this whole thing. And, you know, you can really just get in your own head about it. So I just drive. it is what it is. And sometimes luck's on your side and sometimes it's not, you know, and it's that way for everybody. And I think it's just something that sometimes you have to accept about racing is there are some things that are beyond your control. You know, you can control how you drive in the car. You can control how you prepare the car and you can control how you prepare yourself, but you can't control your competition and you can't control the weather. Right. And, so you got to let that stuff go a little bit and just do everything you can do to make yourself be successful.
Well, we'll have the results posted along with this podcast from the Nationals. But now, Doug, you were saying earlier that that this was, you know, it's the fastest growing form of SCCA is the rallycross mm-hmm. stuff. So obviously it's in this growth phase. One thing I wanted to ask you, Michelle, maybe being involved with Dirtfish and all this stuff, how do we help keep do you think that this growth going? What are some of the pitfalls we can, you know, maybe fall into that we want to try and prevent to keep people interested in doing rallycross and therefore stage rally in the end?
Yeah, you know, it's really hard, especially when you're kind of at this pivotal time right now. And, you know, being at the Nationals, if they want to grow a lot, a big piece of the equation there is the course degradation that, you know, it's another one of those things that we have to be thinking ahead on. So if we want to have more competitors, if we want to open up those caps on the races, we have to kind of think outside of how we're doing things right now as far as course degradation. You know, maybe find some bigger sites, you know, make some quicker course changes, just be a little bit more prepared. You know, I don't want to go down the solo line, but they run two different courses at the same time. So maybe something like that's even an option for them of, you know, having half the field on one course and the other half on the other, and then switching after lunch, just so you can run a few more people through.
That was a common topic over this past week. And even on Sunday, talking to people was you had the court, you had a big enough place. We had 28 acres. You had a big enough place where you could have two courses where you could safely run people on both courses. It's just a matter of do you have enough workers?
Oh, right.
And I think that's where your bottleneck is right now. But with regards to the sites and the ground degradation, one of the advantages of the Indianola site is the area that we use for competition there at the National Balloon Classic field is a parking lot and has been for years for 10,000 cars every year. So they're all compacting the surface, right? Mm-hmm. And it is extremely durable. Not that degradation still doesn't happen, and just as in anywhere, you're watching for changes and looking for unacceptable ruts. But here at Heartland Park, we had lots of space. We had a great partner in Heartland Park, but it's basically a hayfield, which mm-hmm. is fine for a regional or even something this size. Would have been great for a divisional, I think you need something more compact. And so I don't know if we could have gone, could have spent the money, and I know that there's not money to do this, but I'm, just wishful thinking here. If I had the ability to just cut a check, I would have gone over that whole site for about a month with a roller, compact it down just as much as possible. So I think when searching out new national sites, large parking lots like that, where you have year after year, tens of thousands of cars running over this ground, compacting it down, that's the type of site that's really going to hold up best.
Yeah.
And I think as your entries increase to to maybe 200. You're going to have to look at that because, Michelle, you're right. The degradation was, especially on Sunday when the rains came, it was deep. I know Bob Selig in Prepared Front Wheel Drive, he has this little black Civic. It has like 3 horsepower. but it also weighs like 12 pounds. So
it's like the Metro she competed in.
Right. And, so normally he is amazingly quick. But the last runs, he said he never lifted. His foot was on the floor the whole run, and he never got over 30 miles an hour.
Right.
but that's because he was on the verge of being high centered the whole way around.
Yep.
So I know I've been to Dirtfish when you guys had what do you call it, Rallycross Fest or Rally Fest or whatever it was, and you guys did set up two courses that ran simultaneously. Now, granted, that had gravel as a base; it mm-hmm. wasn't a dirt base, and so it held up pretty well. There's some sweeping that happened, and it dug out a little bit, but. Separating it out certainly did seem to improve things for that event, and I can definitely see why there's a draw for that kind of thing. Here's something that I started thinking about. I was kind of coming up with all these questions and thinking about Rallycross and rally in general. You have all these people that we want to get involved in the sport, and we want them, of course. Rallycross being the most accessible, you can take any car. You can take your daily driver technically out there, right?
Yep.
I did take my daily driver out there, didn't you?
But, you know, I'm curious whether we're having a challenge now because today's modern cars have all these nanny devices. Are they going to present a problem for the future of Rallycross and therefore eventually stage rally?
Oh, that's a really good question, Mike.
I know. I don't ask the easy ones, do I?
I talked to a couple of people, Greg Cheney in Prepared Front Wheel Drive and Rupert Barrington, who's an amazing photographer. If you ever get a chance, do a search. Find Rupert's work because he's phenomenal. But anyway, he was driving in stock all-wheel drive in his Subaru. And both of them were describing the same problem to me. It's that you turn the traction control off with the button, and it says it's off, but it's not really off. That is, if it senses the wheel spinning for too long of a period of time, it turns all the nanny stuff back on, and you're in this limp mode type of thing. And I know Greg, he also had problems with the ABS. Kind of being a little overly aggressive, and so he found that fuse and just yanked it out. A lot of the times you can just yank a fuse, but not always. And in fact,
sometimes this stuff is programmed in the ECU, right?
Right. You know, it's becoming increasingly difficult to be able to mechanically disable those. And so, you know, even you get into a modified class, you're still combating some of those same issues because, as you say, it's built into the ECU.
Michelle, you want to chime in about these challenges?
Yeah, you know, one thing that I find incredibly fun is to, you know, drive through a slalom on dirt without engaging traction control or ABS. Now, that might not be the fastest way through it, but it's certainly challenging as a driver. So you can work around it a little bit, but it is going to prove a challenge, especially in the stock classes. And even in stage, you know, outside of open class where you can put in your own wiring harness and, you know, run your own ECU and do some stuff to get rid of all that stuff. Like Doug was saying, you know, just pulling the ABS fuse anymore isn't necessarily enough because the computers know it's out and then they go all haywire and the discs aren't working anymore and things like that. So I think it will be a challenge. You know, one thing I did notice at the Rallycross, though, is that a lot of people are not driving new cars. So, you know, that might be part of it. Maybe they don't want to beat up on their new car, but, you know, I suppose you can always go and find the Craigslist special and pick something up for $1,000 and it doesn't have any of those things and go have a good time with it.
My SVT, Focus, none of that. And yeah.
What year is it?
It's a 2004 and,
right.
It will be making a triumphant return to Rallycross next season. Don't drive like my brother.
Love it.
It's the lesson here.
There's a story there. We won't get into that. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I've had some mixed experiences with this. I've had traction control come on and stuff that's about 10 years old, and it's about throwing me off the road and put me into an accident.
Oof.
But some of this modern stuff is actually pretty phenomenal. I had a rental car. This is a horrible story. Maybe I shouldn't say this on the air. I had this rental car up in Vermont, and it snowed. It was a Ford Fusion electric/gas car, and it was actually a pretty nice car, and it snowed like 6 inches overnight. So my friend and I there were like, well, we're going to go out in a parking lot and see how this car handles in the snow. And it was even on all seasons, and it was, I don't know, 25 degrees outside or something. And for the life of us, we could not get that thing to slide out. And we're both rally drivers, so we're pretty good at getting cars to slide. And the traction control system on that car was so incredibly phenomenal that I left thinking, you know, most people in the world who drive today need to have a car like this because it would keep you out of an incredible amount of trouble. Now, unfortunately for us, it was not very fun. The parking brakes popped up the front wheels instead of the rear. So, you know, but the system was pretty amazing. So, you know, I think that stuff's coming along. and advancing really, really well. But from someone who, you know, wants to have that ultimate control over the car, I don't like it. You know,
yeah.
I feel I trust myself more than I trust the electronics in there.
Well, not all it takes is one bad input, you know, and from the sensor, and, you know, it thinks something, this is going to happen, and next thing you know, it's doing something different than what you expect it to do. And
what the sensor is missing is vision. It doesn't know where the road is, and it doesn't know where you need to go. So, yeah, your car might be sliding a little bit in the snow, but if you're on the road, it's great. If it overcorrects you somewhere, it might actually be pulling you into a ditch, you know?
You know what? Actually, me and Matt Kalish felt that way in a little Subaru Crosstrek at Ojibwe when it was all slippery and muddy out there. And we were trying to get to a spot, you know, to do some of our filming. And, you know, we're spirited driving, right? We're not a rally car at that point. But, you know, as a photog, Doug, you got to get to your spot. You know, you're there behind the zero car or the double zero at that point. Following them through so that way you can get there in time and not hold up the rally at all. And just every time we were trying to just, you know, follow that kind of racing line, it would start to slide a little bit, and that darned anti-lock on the front left would kind of pull us actually more out than it would, you know, help us just kind of steer around the corner. And it was just definitely a hair-raising experience with that, because it wasn't the control we were thinking we'd have, and it was definitely a little concerning, because we knew where the road was going, but you're right, it doesn't have the vision. So anyways, that's just a curious thing I had, is that, you know, what's the future with that kind of stuff, because we all want to see newer cars out there, which kind of leads me to my one of my tougher questions about, you know, we talked about rallycross in general, but rally in general, how do we improve rally in North America? You know, we see it obviously doing well in Europe. It's always had a big draw, and we want to make rally in the U.S. and in Canada get better and better, get more viewers, you know, get more people competing. And this is going to go back to both you, Doug, because we haven't had you on in a while, and you as well, Michelle. Kind of the blank check question. If there's anything we could do as a sport to help grow it, be it increased sponsorship, more media coverage. One of the suggestions with the car types was Dylan Van Way. He thought we should maybe start a homologation kind of thing, and maybe with that we'd get ECUs that would turn off all these nanny damn devices, right? But that would cost more. But maybe we'd get newer, more interesting cars. Maybe that will draw more people into it. What would you like to see happen to increase the number of competitors and viewership and just make the sport just that much better? Michelle, I'll start with you.
Sure. So, you know, when I tell people who aren't into cars that I work at Dirtfish Rally School, they say things like, I didn't know there was a school you could go to learn to protest.
Ouch.
Yeah. So when I look at rally as a motorsport in the US and Canada to an extent, I don't know quite how it is up there. It's really about educating people that is actually out there, right? Because it's so exciting. It's so invigorating, not just as a competitor, but as a spectator, as a crew member, as a volunteer. And it's such a mystery to figure out how to get involved, where they are, what it is. And so I think that's where, you know, the schools that are in place, the grassroots efforts that are going in with the SCCA, we can really build the sport in the United States and let people know, hey, it's there, right? And once people know it's there, then they're obviously going to want to get involved because it's awesome. And why wouldn't they? And that's ideally, you know, once we get that participant base up a little bit, it's going to attract more media. It's going to attract more sponsors. And as a competitor, that's what we really need to be successful, is, you know, some help with the funding side of things, because it's not a cheap kind of motorsport at all. So building the exposure of the sport to the general public, I think will have a great effect in getting more sponsors and getting more media coverage on board. And Mike, what you're doing with this show is great, right? You're getting out to an audience, getting more people familiar with it, getting names out there. You know, we're not all so fortunate to have a last first name like Sebastian. So,
right.
Who we are. You're bringing this.
I'm going to have my name legally changed.
Right. Well, you're bringing the sport to the people, and that's really, really important. So, that's what I want to see, is to just demystify the sport a little bit.
All right, Doug, on to you.
You know, with rally, and growing North American rally, I think there needs to be a symbiotic relationship between the stage rally world and the rallycross world. And I think, you know, Dirtfish is doing some really good things to try and do exactly that. Not that everyone who rallycrosses is going to then go and stage rally, but what people, when they go to stage rallies, if they happen to find a stage rally, say, oh, you mean I can get a taste of this by going rallycross with my local region? Fantastic. Or the other person comes to, you know, and finds out, oh, I've got this fun thing I can do with my car, fun with cars, on the dirt, and then they learn, oh, there's a stage rally within driving distance of here? Really? Tell me more about that. Especially with the rallycross building interest in stage rally, you also get people interested in becoming involved in stage rally. Mike, like we had at Open Paddock, a question addressed on our Facebook page about, hey, how do I get involved in this, right? And so you get people interested in the sport, and they become interested in being a part of it, being volunteers. How do I, you know, how do I become a corner marshal? What do I do to go and help the rally organization? Because that's just as much of an issue with a lot of these stage rallies as the competitors, is getting the volunteers to actually make all the logistics work, right?
And it takes literally hundreds to run a stage rally.
And so the more people that you bring into rallycross and can then introduce to straight stage rally and vice versa, you start building this up, you know, from the ground up, then all of a sudden sponsors will start seeing a return on investment opportunity. You know, they see, oh, it's not just a dozen kids with their Subarus tearing up some farmer's field. There's all of a sudden this is serious competition with a significant number of people and such like that. And so now maybe it's, you know, with the stuff that that you and Matt are doing with the ARA and some of the things you're putting together, and Michelle, what you folks are doing up there in Dirtfish, you know, these little highlight spots. I would love to see that grow into, what we used to have on Speed with the WRCs. We'd have this little half-hour highlight show, and you know, whereas us, you know, complete rally geeks want, no, I want a live camera all the time so I can see the entire thing and every little, you know, nitty gritty detail. That's why we have WRC Plus, right? But you know, that's not necessarily what's going to bring in the sponsors. What's going to bring in the sponsors is the army of casual interest people that tune in for these half hour spots. That's where you're going to see a return on your investment. They already have us hardcore fans hooked, right?
Right.
They don't need to work on us. So they've already sold us, and so now it's selling the more casual fan. But it first needs to be getting more people involved in the sport, so that there's enough eyeballs to make sponsorship worthwhile.
All right, that's a fair answer. Fair answer. Now, for Michelle, can you tell us a little bit about what Tri-State's like? Because first of all, I need to do a correction. I thought Tri-State was actually in the other corner, like over by like Utah, Colorado, and all that stuff. So, in our Rallycast, I mentioned that it's actually over what's Nevada and Arizona, Utah. That corner, is that right?
That's correct. Yeah, it's about 80 miles outside of Vegas.
Oh, that's really convenient then. People can just fly into Vegas and drive down to that. That's actually pretty darn convenient.
Yeah, it's not bad.
So you've been prepping for this one, I'm guessing, looking at the basic notes of for Recce and all that stuff, where the route's going to be. What's your impression so far?
We haven't done the rally before, so it'll be our first time out there. But there's a couple stage videos from when it's been out there before. The roads look pretty fun. From what I can see, they remind me a lot of what the roads look like in Rally Colorado. So kind of hard-packed clay with some rough sections, but really good visibility. So that'll be a nice change from having trees around us all the time. Allow us to push in some spots, I'm sure. And it's about 100 miles of stage, and it's all centered around this little town, Mesquite, Nevada. So it looks like logistically it's going to be a pretty easy rally to run.
Excellent. So after that, I'm guessing it's going to be gearing up for 2018, or you got some other events for the rest of the year that you and Sam are going to be doing?
Big White rallies coming up in Kelowna, British Columbia. I think Sam's still up in the air on that one. I might be driving that one if I'm not co-driving with him. So that will
Sweet.
Be a pretty fun race to do. And then for 2018, we're gearing up to go after the North American Rally Championship as a team. So that's going to include all of the American Rally Association events all over the United States, and then a couple of events in Canada. We just kind of have to figure out all the schedules and budgets and that kind of stuff to figure out which Canadian events we'll be doing. So I'm really excited to do that. Most of my rallying's been on the West Coast, so it'll be nice to see what those stages on the East Coast, well, east of Ojibwe, have in store for me. And so that should be pretty fun. And then I have a couple other rides lined up with some folks for races outside of that. So I get in the car with a couple other Dirt Fish and staff and a couple of our former students as well.
Oh, that's cool. So you're actually teaming up with some of the students that have gone to the level that they're going to be doing stage rallying. You're going to be co-driving for them?
It's actually it's kind of an interesting progression to see some of these people come through. I think one of them came in for like a 2-hour corporate event with his team and just loved it and came back and did a 3-day, and then they bought Pat Richard's old car.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. And so they've been racing that up in Canada, and I've teamed up. Two guys named Ken bought that together, and I've been teaming up with one of them. So we had his first rally was Rocky last year, and we had a great event together. So we'll probably be doing that one again this year.
Yep. Awesome.
Yeah. So it's going to be an exciting 2018, and we'll see what happens. Sam and I are hoping for a really good tri-state, going for the podium there to set us on a good upward slope there as we go into the next season.
Well, that sounds really exciting.
Yeah.
Well, any closing thoughts, Doug or Michelle, before we sign off for the evening?
I do want to give a shout out to all my fellow competitors in the Midwest division, and especially in the Kansas City region. Mid-div drivers at the Rallycross Nationals took home 38% of all the trophies, and the Kansas City region took home 13% of all the trophies, including Mark McCubbery and Mark Hill, who took first and second in prepared all-wheel drive. Mark McCubbery is, and he is just a workhorse in Rallycross. He does so much for the sport. It was really, really nice to see him get his first title.
Michelle, any final words before I let you go? How do everybody follow you on the social media and all that stuff?
Sure. First, Mike and Doug, I just want to say thanks for having me on with you guys. It was great having a conversation with you and a lot of fun. So hopefully we can do this again soon. And you can follow me on Instagram and Facebook at M Miller Racing. Just like that. And I try to do a good job of kind of keeping up with my adventures in life. You have to put up with a few photos of the dog as well as race cars. So
we love rally dogs.
That's right.
Well, that's awesome. Well, just remember, everybody that follows us, you can please rate us on iTunes, give us a follow on Facebook and Twitter and all that mumbo jumbo. We'll have this, of course, along with all of our previous podcasts. As Michelle was talking about, we had We had Sam Albert on just a couple weeks ago. There's all kinds of great podcasts we've had this year, and we're just going to keep rolling with them as people keep requesting to come on now. It's been getting pretty busy here in the Open Paddock Studios, but we just love doing it. Thanks again to Michelle Miller, to Doug Patterson. Thank you for coming back on the show. It's been a long time since we've been able to do this. And everybody, have a good night, and look forward to seeing you out on the stages.
Ha ha ha!